any concerns you've got.
Well, who are we? First off, I'm Dusty Johnson, and my colleagues Steve Kolbeck and Gary Hansen. We are your three public utilities commissioners. You're our bosses. We're elected statewide to six-year terms. One of us is up each 2 years. And we really sit as judges, deciders in this kind of a proceeding. We're administrative law judges. We're not attorneys by trade, but the commission itself is an administrative law court, so to speak. And the formal hearing that will be coming up in February is going to look and feel a lot like a court proceeding. And so that's kind of who we are. Number two is parties. And parties are just folks who've got the rights in that court proceeding to do things like call witnesses, introduce evidence, cross-examine witnesses, do discovery, which is a process by which you can get data and information from the other parties. And right now we've got three major types of interveners or parties. The first is obviously Black Hills Power. This is, you'll sometimes hear them called the applicant because this is their application. You've also got the commission staff. And the commission staff is a separate entity. I mean, these are these folks sitting over there at those other two tables. And they can't talk to us, and we can't talk to them about the proceeding, just in the same way that we can't talk to Black Hills Power, and Black Hills Power can't talk to us about this proceeding. There are laws that say when you're a judge, you've got to be impartial, and anything we say to one another about this case has to be in a meeting like this, open to the public and recorded, and make sure that we're doing everything transparently so that everybody can see it. And we're very proud of our Public Utilities Commission staff. I'm going to introduce them quickly. We've got closest to me is, and go ahead and raise your hand so they can tell you, are John Thurber, Dave Jacobson, Karen Kramer, Tim Binder, Terry LaBrie Baker, and Bob Knadel. And I'm not going to go through each of these people's resume, but some of these folks have worked on, you know, a dozen or more rate cases, decades within utility regulation. Some of them have a great level of experience in utility law or in accounting. These are really the experts that we look to put together their recommendation to the commission. They're going to call, you know, their own witnesses and hire their own experts, and they're going to put on their own case in front of the commission. And then the final type of party we have are interveners. And, you know, if anybody wants to have party status, they needed to apply. The deadline was Friday, but they just filled something out saying we've got a peculiar interest in this proceeding, and so we want to be able to call witnesses and cross-examine witnesses and introduce evidence into the record. And right now we have two major categories of interveners. We've got a group of large industrial-type users that have requested and been granted intervener status, and then we have a group of residential ratepayers who have requested and been granted intervener status. And they will have a formal role to play as we move forward in this proceeding. And then finally, number three, we've got citizens. And we've already received dozens and dozens of comments, which are posted on our website, from citizens. Your comments tonight will be a part of the record. We're recording this. And, you know, we'll make sure that this audio archive is up on our website. And everything, I mean, every contact we get from citizens becomes information that we can help, we use to help us try to decide how to think about a proceeding like this and what kind of questions we should be asking. So real quick, I want to walk through the process. First off, the filing has been made by Black Hills Power. It is on our website. We'll talk more about that in a second. But their filing is based on actual numbers from a historic test year, which was, you know, last year. I mean, that's kind of a simplified version of it, but from some numbers from an historic test year, real numbers. Now, they can request some known and measurable adjustments to that historic test year, but in general, we're talking about real numbers that have happened in the past, so they can be tested and analyzed, and they're not just conjecture about the future. The burden of proof is on Black Hills Power. They have to prove their case, or they don't get what they're asking for. So that's step one of the process. Step two is kind of the stage we're in right now, and it is review by the interveners and by really all parties, certainly Public Utilities Commission staff. And the staff, they're going to hire experts, people with multi-state, in some cases multi-decade expertise in these sort of proceedings, and they're going to ask a whole lot of questions, and they're going to dig deep. And all of the parties, the industrial interveners, the residential interveners, the staff, they're going to develop their own opinions on things like what are just and reasonable expenses, what is a reasonable rate of return, and how do you structure rates for different types of customers so you make sure that the people who are causing the costs on the system are the people who are paying those costs as closely as can be determined. And then as you get toward the end of the process, you get to a hearing, which is most likely going to happen in the third week of February, and that again looks like a court case. And we're going to take in all of this information, what will likely be hundreds of pages of transcripts from a court reporter and what will be certainly a fair number of witnesses called by the different parties, sworn under oath to provide the whole truth, nothing but the truth. And then we will, individually, the commissioners will come up with their own decisions about things like expenses, rate of return, revenue requirement, and rate design. And some of the big questions that I know that real people in the real world have had are, what kind of expenses are you going to allow this company to put through? And we don't know the answer to that yet, because those decisions are going to be based on the facts. But I'll give you quickly some historical perspective. Sometimes people will say, utilities shouldn't be able to, you know, spend a whole bunch of money on marketing, and I shouldn't have to pay for that. And in general, public utilities commissions across the country have agreed with you that if it is educational, like a safety announcement, that maybe that's the kind of thing that ratepayers have an interest in helping to pay for. But if it's just improving the brand image of a public utility, that is generally not something that is considered allowable under this kind of a proceeding. Executive compensation is generally a source of a lot of discussion. And what you found in other jurisdictions and in different proceedings is a lot of times those CEOs and other executive salaries are allocated not to the ratepayers, but to other parts of the business, the less regulated parts of the business, so that by and large, not totally, but by and large, those salaries don't fall on the backs of ratepayers. One more quick example would be merger and acquisition activity. This rate case is really focused on what is the direct cost to provide you with safe, affordable, and reliable electricity. And costs that are tangential to that or far outside of that scope are generally not considered recoverable in this kind of a proceeding. Now, I don't know what we're going to do here, but I wanted to give you some historical perspective. And with that, I'm going to finish up with... Oh, I skipped a slide. Sorry, there you go. That's what I was just talking about. I should tell you that a commission decision is, at least right now, according to state law, we're supposed to render a decision by March, toward the end of March. If we don't render a decision by March, then Black Hills Power is able to put its rates into effect subject to refund. But what I want to finish with tonight is talking about the commission values. What do we view our job as? It's very clear in the regulatory sphere across the country that public utilities commissioners view their job as being focused on the public interest. It's bigger than one company. It's bigger than one person. It is bigger than just one year. It is a far-sighted analysis of what is best in the public interest. And I think there are four values that we have seen, at least I have seen in my 5 years on the commission, that Commissioner Hansen and Commissioner Colbeck, and hopefully myself, really place at the center of our decision making. The first is openness. We try to have a very transparent process. That's why we're here. That's why every meeting we have on this topic is recorded. It is put on the web. Generally, it is streamed live to the web. Our formal hearing in February will be streamed live. The audio will be streamed live on the web. The entire application, I have most of it here with me in paper format, but it's all available on the website in, I think, a reasonably user-friendly format. This is not a kind of decision that's going to be made quickly or that is going to be made without lots of knowledge to the public. And with that, I want to point out our website as a part of openness. If you go to puc.sd.gov, you'll see our website, including three pictures of some very nice gentlemen. And I've circled in blue circle up in the upper right-hand corner, if you click Commission Actions, and then you're going to want to go to Dockets. This is a docket, a legal proceeding. And then you're going to want to click on Electric Dockets, because that's what we're doing. And then you're going to want to click on this year's Electric Dockets. And then again, you're just going to scroll down. As I said, EL09-018 is an important number to remember. And right there, the application of Black Hills Power for authority to increase its electric rates. Pretty clear English. And then you're going to get a page that shows all kinds of information. Their balance sheets, their income statements, cost of plant, testimony from, you know, Stuart Wevick and Richard Loomis and all of the experts that they've got trying to put together their case. This is all available on our website, and all of the information we collect as a part of this process will be put up there. So with that, value number two is fairness. Our National Association's logo is actually a set of scales like you would see in a courtroom and in the logos of a lot of you know, judicial entities trying to weigh the interests of people, not just siding with one party or the other because it's maybe politically popular or because it's a nifty thing to do, but rather trying to weigh all interests and make a very fair decision. Number three is fact and law-based, and there's good news. The bad news is that nobody wants their rates to go up, and nobody even wants a request for rates to go up. The good news is that this is not the first time that this country has dealt with this. There is exhaustive case law, some statutes, and lots of commission rules over how a proceeding like this is conducted. We have expertise, and as commissioners, we want this to be focused on the facts. What are the true facts? What does the law say? Rather than, do we want a decision that we think will please Black Hills Power? Do we want a decision that will please the citizens? Let's be fact-based and law-based. And then finally, diligent. This is a very complex and technical part of the world that we're talking about here. And commission staff is not going to be able to come up with their opinions on this proceeding if they don't really dig. And they're experts in that, and they'll be spending several months, as will the interveners, digging and digging and digging. Because this, although this application seems big, this is literally just a fraction of the information that the parties and ultimately the commissioners will have to have at their fingertips to be able to make a smart decision about what are the real costs here and to what extent are those costs fair to put out to ratepayers. So with that, I have talked too long. My apologies. But we will now turn to Black Hills Power. First, what I want to do is look to Commissioner Colbeck and Hansen for them to tell me to what extent I have misstated or been incomplete. Commissioner Colbeck just reminded me to make it very clear to you how we're going to handle the Q&A here in about 10 minutes when Black Hills Power is done. So if I don't do that, he'll remind me again. So, Mr. White, why don't you and your team take it away.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. Commissioners, good evening. I'm Kyle White, here representing Black Hills Power. The Commission has asked me to talk to you about our application. Black Hills Power is a first-tier subsidiary of Black Hills Corporation. Black Hills Corporation is headquartered here in Rapid City, South Dakota. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay. We are a diversified energy company. We are broken down into really two business segments. Our utilities businesses, which serve 750,000 customers in seven states, including 64,000 customers here in South Dakota that are served by Black Hills Power. And we have a non-regulated energy business. In that business, we have a coal mine at Gillette, Wyoming. We're in the oil and gas exploration and production business. We are an energy marketer for natural gas and oil. And in addition, we are a developer of independent power projects, and we sell that generation to other wholesale utilities like Black Hills Power in western United States. Black Hills Power is rooted here in the Black Hills. We, our roots go back to the Gold Rush days in Deadwood in the 1880s. We've been serving through predecessor companies like Black Hills Electric Light Company for 125 years in this area. We have about 69,000 customers. We serve them with 340 employees. And we serve a number of communities throughout the Black Hills region. In addition, we serve some communities in northeastern Wyoming and southeastern Montana. What we're here to talk about is our application for an increase in our electric prices. And Commissioner Johnson talked to you about quite a bit about the process that we're in. But it's a fairly simple formula. Essentially, we are determining what revenues we're entitled to collect through the charges that you pay based upon a formula that says, what are the prudent expenses that we've incurred to provide safe and reliable service, plus a return on our investment. And that investment is investment in power plants, investment in transmission, investment in distribution systems like transformers and meters. And then in addition, we have computer and other administrative investments as well, including line trucks and other things that are necessary to make sure that the lights are on all the time, 24 hours a day. This process is one that is fairly complicated, as Commissioner Johnson, Chairman Johnson said. This is our application, Volume 1. What it represents is the financial records of Black Hills Power. It's a complete statement of our books and records that demonstrates what our costs are that we incur on behalf of you in providing service. In addition, we provide testimony from a dozen witnesses that talk about our business, talk about the decisions we've needed to make on your behalf, and the reasons why we believe we've been responsible in the decisions we've made and the costs that we're asking you to pay. Chairman Johnson mentioned that we have interveners in this process. There are three interveners in the process. They were just approved to be parties this morning, yet we've received over 200 data requests to date. We expect to exchange over the next several months several banker's boxes of information between those parties. And it will be reviewed, it will be studied, and in some cases probably disputed. But that's the process that we're in. And so in February we'll have our hearing, and in March the three commissioners will make a decision based upon the evidence and information provided to them. And at that point they will establish what they believe are just and reasonable rates for Black Hills Power service to you. Our rate case was filed on September 30th. It is an application for an increase of 26.6% for all customer classes. That's residential, commercial, and industrial customers across the board. There are several reasons for the increase. The first is that we began the construction of a power plant a couple of years ago. It's the YGen 3 plant. It's at Gillette, Wyoming, and it's sited at our coal mine. That plant will begin serving customers sometime in March next year. And with that, we have a need for a rate increase to cover the cost of that generation that's necessary to serve the increasing load that we've seen in our service area. We also have expanded some of our generation capabilities. We've constructed transmission, we've constructed distribution, and we've served more customers. In addition, our rates were previously set on costs that we incurred, the historical records Chairman Johnson talked about in 2005. The rates that you're paying today were established and effective January 1st, 2007. Our employees have worked very hard to keep costs down. We recognize that we have an obligation to serve you and to do it in a responsible way, and we'll demonstrate a little later in the presentation just how well we've done in the past several years of keeping rates stable. The proposed increase affects all customers similarly. A typical residential customer using 600 kilowatt hours a month would see about an $18 a month increase. The majority of our residential customers will experience a $2 to $3 a day cost for their electricity. Electricity that provides you lighting, refrigeration, heating, air conditioning, entertainment, and communications. All the comforts that we enjoy, including the opportunity to make a presentation tonight here in this facility. Our new rates will not go into effect any sooner than March 1st, 2010. The reason for that is when we settled our last rate case with the staff and interveners, we agreed to a rate freeze until March 1st, 2010. And the reason why we selected that date was at that time, we already anticipated that we would be constructing Y-Gen 3 and that we would need an adjustment in our price for electricity. We have been a growing service territory. We have seen our kilowatt-hour sales to residential consumers since 1995, when we put Neil Simpson Unit Number 2, our last coal-fired generation, into service, of over 40%. Our average residential consumer, you and I, are using 20% more electricity today than we did in 1995. In addition, we have had a growing service territory. We've seen nearly a 20% increase in the number of residential customers we serve, over 8,400 new customers in that 14-15 year period of time. So we've seen substantial growth, and in fact, even with this soft economy, we haven't seen much of a change at all in the need for electricity on behalf of our consumers. The construction of Y-Gen 3 was a time-intensive process. We have a responsibility to make sure that the lights are on for you, that the communities that you live in have the opportunity to continue to grow. And with that, then, we conduct periodic load forecasts. And those are studies to determine what our expected needs will be. And if the increased need is such, we then compare that with what resources, power supply resources, we have available to meet it. And at various times, we say there's going to be a shortage. When that happens, then we prepare what's called an integrated resource plan. And that is a much more sophisticated process that utilizes consultants, that looks at what generation would be prudently added over a 20-year period of time. And so we're looking at a variety of scenarios, a variety of assumptions. We look at different options like energy efficiency, conservation, coal-fired generation, natural gas-fired generation, renewables, and we look for the best outcome. In 2005, our Integrated Resource Plan, or IRP, identified the need for Black Hills Power to have coal-fired generation in 2010. In 2007, we conducted another Integrated Resource Plan that once again identified the need for coal-fired generation as a least cost option for us in 2010. We went forward then to get the construction permits to build that power plant. And then we also had to file with the Wyoming Public Service Commission for what's called a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. And essentially that's a proceeding, much like this rate case proceeding, where the commission has to review information provided by us, information provided by interveners and staff, and decide whether there's a need for that generation and whether it's the right generation. And we went through that process, and in fact, in March of 2008, that commission said that Y-Gen 3 was needed, and it was our least cost option for serving customers over the time period evaluated. At that point, we received all of our permits, and we began construction in March of 2008. And we've been in a construction process ever since. We build these fairly quickly, and within 2 years, we expect to start and complete a major generation addition for our customers. Y-Gen 3 has a number of benefits. It's our lowest cost option for meeting our consumers' load in the future, and it provides an opportunity to meet both the load growth and some of the future needs of customers as these areas continue to grow. It gives us the flexibility to replace aging power plants. We have generation that's 40, 50, and 60 years old. That generation, when it was originally constructed, had a 40-year design life. We've already exceeded that design life because of our maintenance approaches and enhancements we've made at those sites, in some instances by 50%. So we're needing to have some flexibility going forward. We have a predictable fuel price. It is sited in a coal mine. We have no transportation to bring that coal forward. In fact, that coal costs about 70 cents per MMBTU. You may not know what that means, but let me assure you, it's a very low cost for the fuel consumed in those power plants. It's also our lowest cost transmission. Because it's sited on our transmission network, we don't have to pay other utilities to wheel or transport our power to you. And finally, it's cost competitive. And why we can say that is another utility started a power plant about the same time we did. It's going to take about a year longer to construct. That power plant will have a cost, they estimate, that is 50% higher than what we've included for this power plant in this application before the Public Utilities Commission. We're at two-thirds the cost of what that power plant's likely to be. Our rates are reasonable. We have really worked hard to hold the line since 1995 when we added our last coal-fired generation. If you look at the consumer price index over that period of time, that's what we consider inflation on the goods and services that we need to buy for our homes. It's gone up over 40%. If you look at utilities across the United States, they did a nice job of holding the line for a while, but in recent years it's ramped up quite significantly and up again nearly 40%. Black Hills Power entered into a rate freeze in 1995 that we extended for a long period of time, over 10 years. And then we had a 7.8% increase on January 1st, 2007, and then some pass-ons of fuel purchase power and transmission cost increases that bring us up 14% compared to over 40% increases for consumers. So we've worked hard. Generation additions are major changes in our operations. They cause larger increases than probably any of us would like. But that's the nature of our business. These gentlemen here will not allow us to increase rates unless we have costs to support the prices that we're asking for. We didn't have the cost to support the prices we're asking for during this period of time. And that's why we have the difficult situation we have tonight, where we're asking for a larger increase than probably any of us would like. But it's necessary so that we can provide safe and reliable service, and these communities that we live in can continue to grow and prosper. With that, we are available here to hear your comments, and if you like, I believe we'll have an opportunity to discuss any questions that you may have of us.
Okay, thanks, Mr. White. Now we are into the real meat of this evening. What we want to do is make sure that we're all respectful of everybody else's time. So if you've got a relatively short comment or question, we want to hear from you first so you can get on your way if you need to. And if you've got some longer comments, let's just hold you just a little bit so we can get people out of here if they've got something they've got to do tonight. We want to make sure that when you come up to the microphone, and this is intended to be an informal atmosphere. If there's something we can do to make this more comfortable for you, let us know. What we want is for you to just come down, speak into the microphone so that we can get this recorded and put up on the internet. Again, we want to be open and transparent. And say your name, maybe spell your last name if it's difficult. We want you to speak slowly and clearly. And then, you know, let us know if you've got a question to the commission about the process. Let us know that you want an answer. If you've got a question of Black Hills Power as far as their application, let them know you've got an answer. You want an answer. And otherwise, you know, we'll just take your comments. And that, again, that's the kind of thing we use to help direct how this proceeding should go forward. So with that, you know, what am I missing? Okay. With that, let's go ahead. If you've got questions or comments, again, we'll take the shorter ones first, either questions or comments. It always takes a little bit to get started, but generally once we get started, things go pretty well. I can call on people randomly if that will be helpful. All right. I love the volunteer. Thank you, sir, for breaking the ice.
Continue with coal, we continue to pollute, we continue to degrade our water, our air, or we can work towards clean energy. I myself, if this increase involved wind energy or solar energy, I'd be all for it. But I think that area east and southeast can't see putting another plant on the line. Let's put some of that money towards wind generation, solar generation. You folks, I believe, bought Aquila Power here sometime back. Is that correct? Was that, did I get those figures straight, 900 and some million?
Mr. Sandig, we want to make sure you get answers to your question, but let's get all your answers, and that way we can make sure Black Hills Power gets them all answered. So, I'm keeping notes. So you want information on the Aquila transaction and maybe information they've got on renewable efforts. So
yeah,
go ahead, proceed.
Just like every other business in this area, you guys have to make a living too. I could live with like a 5 or a 6% increase, and I think everybody else could too. But 26.6% is too much. And I'd ask you as a commissioner to regulate for tomorrow. Coal can be obsolete 10 years from now. That coal can stay in the ground indefinitely until the technology exists to burn it clean. We're at that crossroads right now, and you guys hold such a delicate balance. You're a big part of history. You're going to be. And I really would ask at this stage of the game to really think hard on that. And last and not least, if they did get this 26% increase, I lost my home, my family lost everything they had in the Grizzly Gulch forest fire of 2000. 2002. This is the closest I've come in going on 8 years to talking to actual people rather than corporate attorneys on getting this matter settled. Again, the government, the state government, the federal government was awarded an out-of-court settlement back in 2006 for nearly $5.9 million for costs associated with this fire, although BHP accepted no responsibility for starting it. They did, in an out-of-court settlement, pay the state government. We as taxpayers funded the lawsuit that brought it to an out-of-court settlement. And now we have had a lawsuit since 2002 that has gone absolutely nowhere. We have had every delay, every stall tactic. It's never ending. Black Hills Power has very deep pockets, much deeper than mine. But I would ask this commission, before you grant any type of increase, that you consider stipulating that Black Hills Power settles all liabilities that are out there, and there are several private citizens like myself. Actually, you're our last barrier. It's been 7 going on 8 years. We had no insurance. We burnt on July 1st. My wife was diagnosed with terminal cancer on October 3 months later, and we could really stand getting this settled and taken care of. And I guess I would just like to thank you folks for the opportunity to bring this out. And I would ask you to carefully consider that. And I'd like to say to Black Hills Power people, I didn't go looking for this war. I've gotten along. My family has lived here. Our home that burned was a three-generational family home. We had no qualms. We had no problems with Black Hills up until the day we burned. But by darn, when you can settle out with the government in 2006 and yet ignore private, poor little people like me, leave us out to hang out to dry. Well, I have a problem with that. But please, if you give them a rate increase,
well, thank you very much. That was very respectful. You raised a number of interesting points that you wanted answers to. So let's have Black Hills Power respond. Mr. White, if you could, I mean, oh, there's a lot there, but if you could respond concisely so we can get to some other folks here. But, I mean, I heard, you know, let's find out if you guys are doing anything on renewables. Let's find out to the extent that Aquila costs are being put onto the backs of Black Hills Power ratepayers. I think those are the big things. I mean, if you want to respond to Grizzly Gulch, you may have limitations to what you can talk about, but and that may be more specific to just discuss with this gentleman, but certainly the wind and the Aquila.
Okay. Well, I noted several things, Mr. Sandage. First, we do finance these power generations with long-term bonds and also investments by our shareholders. So the consumers aren't paying the full cost of the generation. They're paying our carrying cost or our investment cost, a return on that investment. So it's similar to how other businesses finance their operations. When we talk about coal-fired generation, we considered the effects of the greenhouse gases and what the future may represent with regard to that, and we still found that this was the least cost option. And that's because we need baseload resources to serve customers. And the only real alternative is natural gas-fired generation. And those of us who are natural gas customers do know the volatility of natural gas prices. Coal-fired generation brings a more steady price because of the fuel that we use. As far as wind generation, in fact, this case does have expenses in it for the wind generation that we purchase. And we're purchasing 25 megawatts on behalf of our customers. It's a start in that direction. Wind generation is more expensive because it is what's called an intermittent resource. Tonight, because there's not much wind, we wouldn't likely have any generation coming from those wind turbines. And so we need power plants like the YGen 3 plant available to ensure that the lights are on and we can have meetings like these. But it's part of the portfolio, and we recognize that consumers and for the company believe that it should be part of our diverse resource that we use for you. One of the challenges for wind generation in South Dakota is most of the windy areas are where people don't like to live, and therefore there's no transmission infrastructure there to bring it in cost effectively. And I've been a member of the South Dakota Energy Infrastructure Authority now for 4 years, and our task has been to try and find ways to develop renewable resources. It's very difficult because of the distance South Dakota is to markets like Minneapolis, Chicago, Omaha, where there would be a greater demand for wind resources. The Aquila transaction, you're correct. We did pay $940 million for those five utilities. That was closed in July of 2008. And none of those costs are associated with Black Hills Power's operations. We have some allocations of our corporate costs from Black Hills Corporation because we have accountants, attorneys, HR people, ourselves in the regulatory department to support all of the utilities or all of the companies that I showed on that first slide. In fact, Black Hills Power pays about 20% of the overall costs of Black Hills Corporation's corporate overheads, let's say. As far as the Grizzly Gulch fire, I'm sorry for the loss that you've had associated with that. It is a litigation. That means that parties disagree in those processes, and it is something that I'm not prepared to discuss with you tonight.
No, none of you have one. That's why it's reached this point. These people that sat right here, you folks need something from them. These folks right here hold the power. Maybe
Mr. Sandig.
This is all I'm going to say on this. And as far as the wind energy, there's plenty of wind into that.
Mr. Sandig, you did a very good job, raised a number of very legitimate issues there. So excellent job. Tough act to follow, but who wants to be next? You know, and if you want, you can certainly feel free. If we get a little line up, you can certainly sit in the front row here. We don't expect you to stand and wait your turn.
Hi, my name is Stephen Skromeda, Skromeda. I previously sent a letter to the commission. Two questions I have for Black Hills Power. Number one is, with the 7.8% increase that they received in 2007, and with Section 3 of the spreadsheet, that's 34.2%, if the total would be 42% increase for 3 years. Second question is, if the $16.9 million gain that they had on the sale of wagon were the part interest, if that's taken into consideration for the return on that we're asked to pay.
Okay, I want to make sure I understand that. I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Okay. Hills Power recently announced that they received a $16.9 million gain on the sale of part interest of Wyden. Now, I understand that a company is entitled to receive reasonable return on their expenses and on their investment. In the case of Black Hills Power, though, it seems from the prior diagram that they showed is that there's a knee-jerk reaction in a short span of time of 3 years. Why I say that is from Black Hills Power slide, they said that since 1995, CPI has gone up 41%. Here, if I take the 7.8% and the Section 3, which they're taking out the energy cost adjustment, which is included in here, that's a 42% increase. So they're trying to recoup in a matter of time of 3 years what the CPI has done in 14 years or 15 years. So they're going 1% over. Also, they indicated, I believe if I'm correct, the national price of electricity has increased 38%. They want to increase 4% beyond that for the period of 1995 to 2010. So they're increasing beyond the CPI, beyond the national price increase of electricity in both cases. So they're trying to recoup all this in 3 years. Well, it's hard on people. I'm all electric. So I'm not that person that's going to have an increase of $18 a month on average. I'm one of those people, since I'm all electric, that I'm looking at a $50 a month increase or $600 a year. That's a large burden, especially for most businesses, most individuals, and the worst is really winter time. I have no choice as far as to heat my home other than electricity. So I'm looking at electricity costs for the winter going from $216 to $290 a month for the 5 months from November to March. So I understand that companies are entitled to a reasonable return of their expenses and on their investment, but I think by Black Hills Power looking for such a large increase and such a short span, they're trying to cover in 3 years what's happened in 14. And I understand they have the freeze in effect for those multitudes of years, but it's a large burden for residential business consumers that have little option. I have no option. I looked into, can I get a heat pump instead of the heat I use? Too expensive. Can I do natural gas? Too expensive. I'm at their whim.
Boy, great points again. When people are done speaking, you can go ahead and have a seat. If you want a follow-up, we'll give you one. But what we don't want to do is have it turn into a back and forth. We want to make sure we've got some structure. Great points. You want Black Hills Power to respond? Yeah, go ahead and feel free to have a seat, and if you need a follow-up when they're done, we'll make sure you get one. And you can sit close.
Before you go, sir.
You can sit close in case you want to follow up.
I understood your first point.
And if you could say your name one more time, please, sir.
Okay,
thank you.
Your first point, something about the 7.8% increase in 2007.
My understanding is in 2007, on average, Black Hills Power got 7.8% increase.
Yes.
Okay. On the spreadsheet, Section 3, the toll at the bottom, average increase, is 34.2%.
Yes.
So it takes 34.2% plus 7.8% is 42% for a 3 year span.
Okay. Well, let me address the CPI. We have a pass on of fuel purchase power and transmission costs. When we file a rate case, we zero those costs out. And so what you'll see in the application is
a greater increase because I'd reflected 14%. Well, we'd back that down to that 7.8%. As far as the math, I may not track exactly with where you're at, but I will agree that if this increase is approved by the commission, we will be approximately at the consumer price increase for the last 15-year period of time. As far as the YGen 1 gain, I've put up the first slide that I showed. One of the businesses that we're in is the independent power generation business. And YGen 1 is a power plant that was constructed and put in service in 2003. It had a long-term purchase power contract with the Municipal Energy Agency in Nebraska. They elected to buy out that purchase power agreement and own a share of that coal-fired generation. In fact, we've had the Municipal Energy Agency in Nebraska, Montana Dakota Utilities, and potentially the City of Gillette all want to have a piece of ownership in coal-fired generation at our Wyodak mine at costs comparable to what we've included for YGen 3. So it is a cost-competitive resource, and other utilities are still seeing coal-fired generation as something that works. So none of that gain is part of the business of Black Hills Power. It's a business that we have that's a separate subsidiary with its own books and records. None of those costs come over to Black Hills Power. None of the benefits of that business come over to Black Hills Power. As far as the comment about this being a knee-jerk reaction, we have an obligation to serve customers. With that obligation, we have the opportunity to earn a return on investment. There's no pre-approval of the decisions we make. We get to make those decisions. We get to support those decisions. And these three gentlemen get to decide how good a job we did. We believe we've done a good job within the confines of the bargain that we have that was established by the state legislature in 1975 when they established the jurisdiction of the Public Utilities Commission over us. The increase is material. I'm also a Total Electric customer, and so we will see a bigger impact. We haven't seen the impact that our friends that have natural gas have, but I recognize that this is going up materially beginning the winter season of 2009-2010. So each of us have an opportunity to look at our homes, weatherization, how we consume power, talk to the company, see if they have any recommendations for you. If you haven't signed up for our levelized payment plan, that's a good way to help budget so that we don't get those spikes in bills in the wintertime. It certainly helps at our household. But I encourage you to consider that. You'll know what the increase will be sometime next March. That'll give you plenty of time to consider what your alternatives are.
Well, great questions. Two or three really good issues raised there. Thank you. Mr. Scrimita, appreciate it. Hi.
My name is Linda Edel, and
Ms. Edel, could you spell your last name?
E-D-E-L.
Thank you.
And I'm here to speak on behalf of low-income people in Western South Dakota, specifically the elderly. 26 point whatever increase is going to be a major hardship on elderly and disabled on fixed incomes. As I understand it, people on Social Security will not be getting a cost of living this year. Where I work is Western South Dakota Community Action, and we serve about 15,000 unduplicated people a year. Of that, about 70% of those people are below 50% of poverty. So when you're saying $17 a month, that is major. That could be prescriptions, it could be food, it could be anything. Elderly are going to hurt with this increase. I'm curious if you're considering anything that may alleviate the hardship for elderly people on fixed incomes. If you're interested in any expanding any of your energy conservation measures, I know in some states part of rate increases is that you will put aside some funds to help weatherize low-income people's homes. The other thing is I noticed that you said what it would mean to residential consumers. But as I understand it, big companies get a lower rate per kilowatt hour, and I don't exactly understand how you do the formula, but at one point I know residential people were paying 8 cents, and I think Homestate was paying maybe 3 cents or something like that. And I'm just wondering how you determine what is charged to residential versus commercial. But primarily, I'm worried about what is it going to do to low-income and elderly in our area.
Good questions. Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Adele. It is true that different consumers will be affected differently and have differing abilities to pay the increase in these prices, as they do today, the prices that we have. As we look at rates in South Dakota, we have determined through practice that rates will be equal for all customers with similar usage characteristics. And so we group customers into residential, commercial, and industrial. There has been no effort historically in our state to step in and try and benefit certain groups of customers like lower income or elderly customers. Typically, that's been left for nonprofit organizations or for the government to find solutions when consumers don't have an ability to pay. We do work with customers to find payment arrangements if they get into a particularly difficult situation. We will talk to customers about their energy consumption and help them understand that. We are a company that uses employee and shareholder dollars to support nonprofits throughout our service area that have programs to help consumers. And so we see that as an important part. Those costs of what we donate to the community are not part of the rates. As far as energy conservation, we are currently in the process of working with a national consultant to identify changes in our energy efficiency programs, our conservation programs. We will be filing soon an application with the Public Utilities Commission, approving changes to those programs next year. Those will be available to help consumers with dealing with some of the increases that will come next March and into the following year. As far as the rate differences, you are correct. The large industrial customers like Dakota Cement, Dakota Panel, Rapid City Regional Hospital, they all do have lower rates because their usage characteristics are more 24/7 operations. When we build a large power plant, it has the ability to generate kilowatt hours electricity 100% of the time. We as residential consumers maybe use that generation 30-35% of the time. A larger customer is using that generation 60-90% of the time. And as a result, they get a lower cost because the fixed cost, that investment, is spread out over more energy for them. And this commission has always followed the principle of cost causation. And what that means is those of us as consumers pay the cost that we cause. And there's an elaborate process of determining what that cost causation is and what a fair allocation between each of us, between residential, commercial, and industrial would be. Does that answer your questions? Anything more?
Here to represent myself, such as the gentleman from Deadwood did. One question I would have is on the admission issue of your YGen 1 versus number 3, how much cleaner is the emissions going to be from 3 versus 1 and 2? I know that technology has improved in the last however many years since you built 1. Is the emission control better? I mean, is it going to produce more or less emissions? Is it cleaner air that you're pumping out of the end result of the product, of making that electricity? Is the cost factor more or less with 3 versus the previous 2? Does it cost you more money to produce that kilowatt of power with number 3 than do with YGN number 1? With the newer technology, my assumption would be less to produce it with number 3. New technologies have come around in the last several years. Another comment I would have is, I read in the paper someplace, I believe it was, that they said this proposal would give their shareholders an 11% increase in their dividends. Well, if that is the case, and I may have read that and I misunderstood that, but if that's the case, I think every individual who's working in this room tonight would love to receive an 11% pay raise. Cost of living increases for Social Security when they do receive it is around 2 or 3%. Most companies give pay raises of less than 5%. Personally, I would love to receive an 11% pay raise. I'll walk up to these gentlemen and say, gentlemen, I'd like an 11% pay raise at my employer. Please tell them to, cooperate with your commission and provide that for me. Unfortunately, I can't walk up to my employer and say, I'd like that 11% pay raise. Why do the stockholders need 11% pay raise when we're in the middle of a recession? Our economy is struggling. There have been multiple corporations, banks, even throughout the nation that have either failed or gone bankruptcy in this last year alone. Two major car dealers went bankruptcy filings with the federal government and so forth. If that's the kind of situation our economy is in, why do you need a 26-point-some% increase that's going to cost the average customer, $20-$30 a month? Give or take, it depends on the customer. I guess that's about all I'd like to ask of the Black Hills Power.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kasten. As far as the emissions related to the essentially 3 power plants that Black Hills Corporation has constructed since about 2001, under Wyoming law, we are required to deploy in each power plant best available control technology. And as we know, technology continues to improve year to year. And so each power plant has better emissions control and lower standards for pollutants than the previous plant. In fact, YGen 2 and YGen 3 are some of the first power plants in the country to actually monitor and control mercury emissions. And so we are seeing YGen 3, as it comes into service next year, as one of the cleanest coal-fired power plants in the United States because Wyoming clean air standards are even more stringent than the federal government's. Just as a point of fact, 40% of the cost of constructing YGen 3 was for pollution control equipment.
What was that number again?
40%. Approximately 40% of the $247 million it cost to construct that plant for all the owners, was associated for cleaner air, cleaner water. And we believe that's important to do, and that's why coal-fired generation still is part of the resource mix. As far as the 11% dividend, I believe that you may have misunderstood what the position was, and it may be that you're saying an 11% return on equity. In this application, we have equity provided by our shareholders. It's the cash they provide for the ownership of the business. And we have bonds that we issue where banks or private individuals provide cash for the business. What we have requested is that our shareholders receive an authorized return on equity, an opportunity to earn 11.5% on their invested money. We hire an outside witness that's an expert in determining what the cost of capital is, and this was the recommendation that we received from them. I can tell you that will be a key disputed area in this case because it is part of the cost increase. But we believe with the risk profile today, 11.5% is a fair return for our shareholders, and we will defend that through this process. With regard to the economy, it is true that we're all concerned about the economy, and we're all eager for a turnaround. When that turnaround occurs, this community, the Black Hills, are going to want the power that's available for that expansion. This area has continued to grow. You know, the new Target store, the new Shields store, the new hotels, the new restaurants. If we look around, and if we've lived here for any period of time, this area is still growing. And in fact, we haven't seen much change in energy consumption. Each of us as consumers are using 20% more. In 1995, we had limited access to the internet. We didn't have digital cable TV. Very few of us had cell phones. None of us had iPods. There are a lot of things that now are commonplace that are available because of electricity, and it takes more electricity to have those conveniences. So, you know, I appreciate your concerns. We recognize them. But we're in the business of making sure that the power is available for you, and we need the opportunity to recover our costs so that we are here to provide safe and reliable service.
Thanks, Mr. White. And good questions. I feel like a broken record, but they've been all legitimate issues.
Hi, my name is Adam Sanders. I live in Rapid City. I'm not originally a resident of South Dakota, but I came here with the military, and I'm studying engineering from both BH and the School of Mines. And I've studied a lot on renewable energy and, like, emissions. First question, though, is why didn't Black Hills Corporation not foresee in the future? They knew their power plants were going to expire in 40 years, 40, 50 years. Why did they not plan for that and do like a 1% increase every year? So it's gradual. If you look at like Europe and other leading countries, or all over Europe, Asia, those countries have looked, countries have looked far into the future and prepared and held back money in preparation for future expansion and also looking toward renewable energy. You said that Black Hills Power right now is taking in 25 megawatts from wind energy. That's approximately 8 wind turbines, because wind turbines produce 3.5 megawatts power per tower. Right now, I know BP Energy is currently building one of the largest wind energy production plants or areas in the country. It's actually will be the largest in the world, north of Highmore, and that one will produce 580,000 megawatts of power. Why can Black Hills Power not look into the future and expand in this way instead of building another coal-burning power plant, which I'm sure the cost of your power plant is lower than the one you're comparing to because it probably doesn't have the higher emission control. Because I know growing up in Ohio, the power plants there have all had to put in scrubbers and use a much cleaner coal. I know their transportation costs for coal are high because they have to come from a long distance away, where yours is based right at this point of production. So if you're getting the coal right from the source, it should be low cost.
Yes.
And I know it's cleaner coal also because the coal coming out of Wyoming is way cleaner than it would be in the eastern part of the U.S. So your cost is lower there. It takes less emission controls to keep the CO2 down. So why did Black Hills, or is this plant up to the newest technology available today, or is this dated technology? Because if the plant cost is low, it has to be an older technology. Also, I'm a little crazy today. One other thing I wanted to ask, and I'll have to think about it here for just a minute. I'll let somebody else talk.
Okay. Certainly, whenever you think of it, Mr. Sanders, feel free to just pop back down, and we'll make sure we work in. So,
With regard to the engineering that you're studying, Black Hills Power requested of the Black Hills Corporation Foundation, a foundation that has been funded by our shareholders, support for the School of Mines and Technology. In fact, we just had a groundbreaking on a wind turbine out at the School of Mines and Technology that will be available for years to come for engineering students to better understand renewables. I have had the opportunity to participate in trying to develop renewables in the state of South Dakota. The challenge with renewables continues to be the fact that the wind doesn't blow all the time, but consumers need lights all the time. And so we have to build backup generation. With regard to what I said earlier, I incorrectly stated that we have 25 megawatts of generation. In fact, we have 35 megawatts of renewable generation. And it's smaller turbines than what you say at the 3.5 megawatts. But what we went was for the most cost-effective resource. We bought this after request for proposals and then selected Duke Energy to develop generation down near Cheyenne because it's a very windy location. And we're looking for the most capacity factor, the most energy we can get out of those wind turbines. With regard to YGen 3 and its pollution control, it is the best available control technology. At the time that we received the air quality permit from the Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality. And so we have made the investment in that technology, and it is better technology than the predecessor power plants. But it also comes at a higher cost and does consume some additional what they call house power. In other words, some of the generation from that power plant goes into the pollution control equipment before, and it doesn't then serve each of us. Did I address most everything?
I know the cost is high, but like a 3.5 megawatt tower there paid back in 3 years, 100%, and those cost $1.5 million apiece. If they can make the money back and have it paid for in 3 years, I think that's a very good investment. And as for wind, South Dakota is the third windiest state in the country. There is no problem with wind here. Those towers are in excess of 180 feet in the air, and the air is always moving somewhere around 10 to 13 knots per hour there, and that's peak efficiency for wind turbines. Mm-hmm. So I know you're attached to a coal mine, and a lot of people benefit from coal, and a lot of people are employed that way, but like some of the other people said, that's not the future. The future is renewable energy paired with like nuclear and some coal and cleaner coal. The term clean coal is really not true. There is no such thing as cleaner coal at the current time. And like carbon sequestration, that really doesn't work either currently. And the EPA has proven that. They can't even allow testing on it because, like, for example, not to be jumping around, but like, say, for example, if you're going to put in a clean coal power plant, it was done in Florida, and they put a restriction on testing it for the next 10 years or somewhere around 10 years because they found that it wasn't working. And they don't want people to know that it doesn't work. But what I'm just saying is I don't think that Black Hills Power or Black Hills Corporation is looking far enough into the future with renewable technology. And if you're using lower wattage towers, then that means you're using somewhere around 10 wind turbines. Right now there are over 50 of them, I believe over 50 just that BP Energy has put in so far. There's I don't see any reason why Black Hills Power can't be more investing in the future in that aspect.
What I'd like to do, you asked a specific question that I want Black Hills Power to answer, which is you asked about why didn't they raise rates slowly over time to sort of get ahead of the curve a little bit. Some of the energy policy questions I think are really interesting, and what I want to do is when we take a break, all three commissioners really are, I mean, particularly Commissioner Hansen is a national leader in wind energy. He's on the National Wind Coordinating Committee, Collaborative, rather. They changed their name. And so we want to make sure, I mean, I think any of us would love to have sort of an energy policy conversation with you and with anybody, frankly, during break, because those are really big picture questions. And I think I agree with some of your numbers. Some of your numbers, I think, are off and maybe off in important ways. So let's talk and do that. But let's get specific answers from Black Hills Power.
Okay. Well, with regard to gradual rate increases, the decision in South Dakota a long time ago was consumers should only pay the actual costs of the utility services that they receive. And part of the reason for that is we have a bit of a transient population. And what that means is I don't want to pay the costs for somebody else's future. I only want to pay the costs that are necessary to serve me today. And so that's been the regulatory policy in this state. We don't have an ability to bankroll and save this money and put it away for the rainy day. We have the responsibility to move forward with rate cases. The other thing I would tell you, and you're witness to this tonight, a rate case is a difficult process. If we had an opportunity to gradually increase the prices every year, we may not have the same discipline in managing costs. We have a built-in incentive to manage costs because we don't want to be in this process. We come to this process only when we need to. And that's why we don't have graduated increases in rates.
And I might just add, and not specific to this instance, but I mean nationally, I think, and internationally, frankly, you've seen regulatory commissions take a dim view of that just because there is an opportunity cost. I mean, taking money from somebody 20 years ago and not giving them an opportunity to invest that money in what their family or their business felt was appropriate so that that money might be useful by a utility company 20 years down the road has had some difficult economic consequences from an opportunity cost perspective. And so you have generally seen utility commissions want to be focused on the costs of today, and absolutely you need to plan for the future. You want to have a smart energy future, but then that is generally been paid for through debt. And then because generally ratepayers can get a pretty good, you can get a relatively low rate normally for that kind of financing. But that's just sort of an international perspective. Good, great questions. Did you, Mr. Sanders, did you have something else that you remembered you wanted to? Okay, great. Yeah, great, thanks. Ms. Derby, good evening.
I'm here to provide a little bit of support to Black Hills Power tonight, and here's why. I'm confident that this commission, and I'm going to use your words, Chairman Johnson, that you're going to look at this as a fact-based, law-based decision. You're going to use far-sighted analysis that is in the public interest, and that decision will provide safe, affordable, and reliable power. And that's important in economic development. I believe this area has better days ahead. It was talked about earlier that the Black Hills are growing, and they're going to continue to grow. And having safe, affordable, reliable power is very important. I'm glad we have the ability today to control our own destiny. Gentlemen over here live here, work here, play here. We all know them, and that's important to me. I don't know if you weigh into your decision Black Hills Power's role and involvement in the growth of the Black Hills. I don't know if that does weigh into your decision. The fact that they've been here 120 years and have helped the area grow. But I think it is important. They've supported many, 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 they talked about it, nonprofit organizations. They've made many things happen in the Black Hills. They've been involved in economic development, and they'll be involved in the future. So I'm confident you'll get all the facts and you'll make the right decision. And I just wanted to throw in a little support tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Derby. I didn't hear any questions for Black Hills Power, so unless you want them to respond, we'll just go to the next person. Great, thanks. Good evening.
My name is Tracy Sandage, S-A-N-D-I-D-G-E. I'd like to start by saying...
I'm sorry, Mr. Sandage, first name again?
Tracy.
Thanks very much.
I'd like to thank Mr. Sanders, actually, for bringing up several good points that I feel are a major concern of his and my generation. The way I see it, and I certainly can't speak for my entire generation, but we've got about as much tolerance for dirty energy as the older generation had for Vietnam. It's something that, you know, it's a necessary evil, and I think we all understand that. But at the same turn, as Mr. Sanders said, I don't think there's enough being done to look towards the future. For one thing, I'd really like to ask Black Hills Power about is, you say this is an intermediary power source. Well, I'd like to know what is being done for storage capabilities. The Dutch are working on a storage unit right now for their wind fields, because as you said, the wind does not always blow. But they're looking into storage capabilities that's similar to pretty much a big battery that they can store and draw from on the days that the wind is not blowing and transmit it directly across the transmission lines when the wind is blowing. Also, I don't think the subject of solar power has been touched on nearly enough. Last I checked, I'm pretty sure the sun rises in the east just about every day. And Spanish scientists have developed a tower now that they claim can run a city the size of Madrid and its surrounding suburbs on approximately 10 hours of sunlight a day. And I understand that's not going to be, you know, in the winters we're not exposed to 10 hours of sunlight, but there again, if we had storage capabilities in the middle of summer when we do get in excess of 10 hours a day sunlight, I think that could be feasible. They also claimed in this study that it generated enough energy that 14 to 16 of these towers could run the entire continental United States. I would like to know if Black Hills Power has explored any of these ideas and technologies that are being developed in other countries. You know, we're already falling pretty far behind the rest of the world in many, many, many areas. And is electricity the next? This country really doesn't like to play catch-up. We have pride, and I would like to keep that way. And I think energy is one of them that we should be leading at the forefront, not following.
Thank you, Mr. Sandage. As far as looking toward the future, Black Hills Power does do that. We have no mandatory obligations to include renewable energy in our portfolio of resources. South Dakota only has a renewable energy objective. It's voluntary. We have included renewables because we believe they're cost effective at the levels that we've done. And I've said we've included 35 megawatts. Our company has about a 400 plus megawatt peak load. So it's pretty substantial what's been included so far. As far as renewables and storage, storage still is in the development stage. Renewable energy, as you mentioned, is not available all the time. And in fact, it can stop rather rapidly. And we have experience at Cheyenne Light where the peak winter day, there was no wind whatsoever. And if you think about the weather, when it's hot and when it's cold, often you don't see much renewable energy. And we don't have it available tonight, but we have a chart that demonstrates our winter peak last winter. Came on a Sunday afternoon because weather does affect our power consumption for each of us. Very little wind contributing at the peak and into the evening hours, and almost nothing contributed during the day. So storage is a consideration, but it only increased the cost. Renewables are more expensive. Tonight, I'm hearing much concern about costs. Renewables will increase our costs going forward. We have the opportunity, because we purchased the Aquila utility in Colorado, to be active in a state that is mandating energy efficiency. It's mandating renewables. And so, therefore, we're getting experience that we can apply here at Black Hills Power without each of you investing in some of that research and early development. We have solar power at a university campus down near Pueblo that is costing us 24 cents a kilowatt hour. That's more than double what residential consumers pay in this area. And it basically is available a few hours a day, and if a cloud comes by, there's no generation. So there's difficulties with these technologies. It's true there's no carbon emissions, there's no pollution associated with them, but we in America expect better levels of service than what renewables can provide, and that's why utilities continue to invest in natural gas and coal-fired generation. I agree that nuclear will be part of the solution in the future, but we don't have any nuclear facilities in this region. And those will happen in brownfield sites in the eastern part of the country before it'll ever happen here. So that's a ways off. We need to make sure that we're providing service today, and that's why we've made the decisions we have. But we're, like you, aware of the changing environment, but we need to be responsible with our customers' bills, and we're cautious in deploying those kinds of technologies until the time is right.
My thought is we're going to go ahead and take you, because you've been down here, and then maybe take a short break. If there's somebody who really has to leave before we take a 10-minute break, let's come down and we'll work you in. But otherwise, we'll go here, and then we'll take a short break, and we'll come back, and we'll listen to everybody else.
Hello. My name is Carla Cook. K-O-C-K is my last name. And I'm kind of nervous. I don't have any questions for Black Hills Power, because I think you're going to hear a lot from them. So I want you to hear from me. I'm encouraged today to hear so many comments about renewable energy. I think you as a public utilities commission and you as a public utility should hear from the public about what we want for our energy. And so I'm encouraged to hear that. I guess what I'll talk about is fair and reasonable. What they need to prove to you is that their rate hikes are fair and reasonable. That's what I understood from the presentation. And in terms of fairness, I think Mr. White said that Black Hills Power doesn't need a pre-approval for their decisions, that they make the decisions and then they go before you and then try to justify them, which is what they're doing here, to see if they made a good decision. And I would just really encourage you to look at what they're saying and see if they made a good decision, which is why then, and just with everything that they're doing. And I admit that it's complex, and we trust you, and we trust all of you that you'll figure this out. But just to make them prove that they made a good decision. And if they didn't make a good decision, don't make us carry the burden for it. Somebody, I heard in the lobby, somebody was talking about this like a bailout, which is a charged word, but it may be appropriate here. If they made a bad decision, or if they made a series of bad decisions, I don't think that we as the customers should have to pay for that, should have to bail them out for their bad decisions. Their investors, the people who bought bonds, the people who are their stockholders, they should pay for the cost of that, not just us who are just turning the lights on in our house. So that goes to fairness. Now I'd just like to talk about reasonableness. The first gentleman who talked pointed out that maybe they're just asking for 26%, hoping to get 5%. But I think we should talk about 26%. That is a number that is so difficult for people to, will be so difficult for people to pay. People on fixed incomes, the elderly, people who are struggling, people who have lost their jobs. I mean, we can't pretend that things are really good right now, and I have a good job that I think I'm going to be able to keep, but $17 a month, you know, nearly, I don't know how much, figured it out now, I can't remember, but that's a lot of money over the course of a year, and that's a lot of money that's going to be difficult for people to make up for getting the same exact thing that they were getting to start with. And in the presentation, there was a lot of talk about experts, and I know that you're going to hear from a lot of experts during this process, but I don't want you to lose sight of what this would mean for just a regular family, and hopefully you'll have experts who are telling you that, but what this means for a regular family from day to day who's trying to heat their house, and maybe if they're somebody who's living in a rental house and has not a lot of money, their energy costs are, you know, even more than $18 a month, even more than the average consumer. So I don't think that they've, I mean, you're going to hear a lot more evidence, but I don't think that they can say that these are fair and reasonable rate increases, just based on what I've heard today and what I think about the issue.
Very articulate, Ms. Cook. Thank you. My intention is to take a 10-minute break. Certainly, you know, we can have some conversations I think may be helpful out in the hallway about some energy policy issues and some of those things. But if somebody needs to get their comments in before we come back, let's do it. All right, I'm looking at 35 after. So let's try to – we'll start again at a quarter to, as close as we can get. Thanks. We could go ahead and have a seat. We're going to get started in 30 or 40 seconds. Well, I am often in error, and tonight is certainly no exception. First off, I did introduce the staff. I didn't introduce the advisors that, you know, because we can't talk to the experts that, you know, ratepayer and taxpayer dollars pay for, we've got our experts that help the commissioners. They are General Counsel John Smith, who is an attorney, and Greg Rislaw. And John is a former cabinet secretary for the Department of Environment and Natural Resources, so he certainly understands the environmental components. That was for the state of South Dakota. We've got Mr. Greg Rislaw, who brings us an economics and analyst background. He's been with the commission for 30 years and has worked on a great many rate cases on the staff side. And then he was such a guiding light that the commissioners decided they wanted to steal him for themselves. So these gentlemen help us analyze this information, and I neglected to introduce them earlier. And then I talked about what great leadership Commissioner Hansen has done nationally on wind power, and I didn't want to let anybody think that Commissioner Kolbeck hasn't been carrying his weight too. So he is also very involved, particularly on a regional level, with our regional association on renewable energy issues. So with that, let's get back to the main event. Other comments? Well, people are gathering their thoughts. I mean, I will say this sincerely. You know, we do a lot of public meetings in a year on all different kinds of things. I don't want to jinx, you know, the remaining speakers, but the speakers we've had heretofore have been as articulate and have each one of them, I mean, not all of the points were necessarily exactly on target, but every speaker raised at least a number of very legitimate dead-on-target points, the same kind of questions that staff and interveners will be asking as a part of this process. So if you're ever looking for work, you know, maybe the commission's hiring.
7% raise.
Well, last 2 years, state hasn't gotten anything, but I'm just lucky to have a job, as I suspect those of you who are employed are, so.
Well, one of the obligations of the three commissioners is to ensure that utilities have the opportunity to provide safe and reliable service. The question is at what level and what level of expense. We will continue to work hard to meet our obligations to serve customers. If we don't feel that we've been treated fairly, we have the opportunity to appeal the decision. That's a difficult process to go through, and utilities have elected not to do that for many, many years. We haven't seen much litigation since probably the 70s, when there were also significant rate increases for consumers. Most likely what would happen is we would go back and we would get to work trying to trim costs. We believe we run an efficient company, but if the commission felt otherwise, we would focus on that. If that didn't work, we'd be back with another rate case, and we'd try our case again, see if we're more convincing.
Great question. That really cuts right to the heart of it. Thank you. Commissioner Colbeck had something to note.
It was asked earlier where the rate case will be, where the hearing will be. I'm not sure if we communicated it properly, but it will be held in Pierce, South Dakota. Probably as right now, it's called the Matthew Training Center, which is across the street from the state capitol, very easy to find. It will be broadcast live on the website, and there will be an archive of it, an audio archive of it, and there will also be a transcript of it. Right now, it's tentatively planned to be on February 24th, 25th, and 26th. But that is tentative, and that may change. So if any of you are planning to come to that, you might want to mark off those 3 days in your calendar, but you will need to find transportation to Pierre for that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Sanders, I knew would come to you.
I got a last question here. If that type of rate increase goes to the normal consumers, does industry also have that same exact rate increase? Like, for example, the Siemens plant. And one other question with that, is it true that when Black Hills Power has an excess of power, that the cement plant gets free power to burn that off? I have heard from several people that the cement plant, when you get an excess, they get the power and they don't get charged 1 cent for that power to run their huge mixing units because they consume such a large amount of power when they do that. That's all.
All right. Well, if that was the case, they probably wouldn't be intervened in this case. You know, they do not get free power. They pay for the power like all of us do. With regard to the level of increases for different customer classes, we have proposed an equal percentage increase for all customer classes. The decisions that are made will review the facts related to each of the customer classes. One of the principles is the cost causation principle, and the industrial consumers will have the opportunity to explain why our proposal is inaccurate, just as the residential interveners as well. But we have proposed an across-the-board rate increase. That is a bit unique. Often utilities will propose different levels of increases for different customers, but we've seen growth in the entire service territory. We've built generation for all of our customers, and therefore we've asked for an equal percentage increase for all classes.
Other questions or comments? Mr. Kasten, right?
Yes.
Yeah, great.
I've heard more of a comment than anything. I've heard people talk about Mr. White over here has mentioned that Black Hills Power does a lot of community service projects and nonprofit assistance throughout their service area, which is very nice to them. I think it's great that they provide this assistance in nonprofit organizations and try to help and so forth. I just don't want people here to get the impression that there's not anybody else in this area doing that kind of stuff. Mr. T. Denny Sanford, for example, has donated a large sum of money to the Homestake Lab up in Lead, and he's also donated several millions of dollars, I'm sure, to Sioux Falls area and developing different interests over there. His employees of various businesses in South Dakota, and I grant that he's in the banking industry versus the power generation and distribution energy. It's a little bit different. However, just like Black Hills Power, Mr. Sanford also has his regulatory agencies that he has to answer to. It is the Banking Commission, Empire, whoever else at the federal level he has to answer to. But his employees go out and provide many hours of community service in their respective communities throughout the state of South Dakota, and I'm assuming other states that he does business in and has, you know, facilities and employees in those other states. I think it's very nice, again, that Black Hills Power does provide these community service activities. I'd like to thank them for what they've done. Perhaps, as was lately mentioned earlier, they could work with the low-income people and the elderly. If this rate increase were to take effect, and somehow figure out a way they could provide some type of financial assistance to them if they meet certain guidelines, you know, some guideline criteria where you can apply for lower rate, say if you meet certain income guidelines or whatever it may be. So it's not going to affect the elderly and the lower class people so much. Like you say, you know, 26% is almost $300 a year. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying, and that's probably on the low side of a user. Isn't home a lot. They don't, you know, they're really concerned with their usage. If they're gone out of a room, they turn the lights off. The average user probably a little more than that, probably more $400 or $500 a year, as the other gentleman mentioned earlier. You know, again, that's a big chunk of money to take out of someone's budget in a year's time. That $500-$600 has got to come from someplace. But again, I'd just like to thank Black Hills Power for being the community members that they are, and hopefully they will continue to do so in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Kasten.
And we will continue to be a community partner. It's one of our core values. I get a chance to travel around the state quite a little with my daughters who play soccer. Denny Sanford, thankfully, he's a South Dakotan because he's done a lot of great things for this state. As far as the proposal that we have different rates for different levels of income, in the 1970s and 1980s, there were some states that did what were called lifeline rates, where they had certain qualifications for consumers. The practice in this state has been that consumers of electricity don't provide subsidies to lower-income consumers, that those needs-based determinations and support should come from nonprofits or from government. And, in fact, the government this year has expanded the low-income energy heating assistance program, sometimes called LIHEAP, so that it now covers, I believe, 200% of the poverty level. And so there are more dollars and there are more consumers that are eligible for those dollars. And anyone that's concerned about their cost of utilities now can go seek those programs. Most of the bills for heating will be paid prior to this increase going into effect. But I would encourage consumers that are having trouble paying bills to look for those opportunities to get assistance.
My name is James Wilcox, W-I-L-C-O-X, resident here in Bed City. I've got two groups I want to address with my questions. The first one is a process question to the PUC. Should I just do that and then direct my question to Black Hills?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it to us, and then you can ask all your questions to them.
But, the process question is it normal practice to consider a step rate increase versus a one-time increase? I know we talked earlier about we don't want to invest in energy future beyond what our current use is now, and I understand that, and I appreciate that. That you're being good stewards of that edict that the public has given you. But with such a high rate increase like this, or sudden one, is it possible to consider that stepped rate increase?
I'll take the first shot, and then we'll see if commissioners or advisors have other comments. That has not been typical in South Dakota, at least in the history I'm aware of. Now, keeping in mind that we have not had increases quite this large, at least since the 1980s. There have been some jurisdictions that I'm aware of in the last 20 years that have done those phasing in of rates. They're a double-edged sword. I mean, if you decide that, okay, $100 is the appropriate revenue requirement. That's, you know, Mr. White's slide of, you know, revenue equals expenses times the rate on return. If those two sides are supposed to balance to 100, and instead of giving them 100, you're going to ease them in at 90 and then 95 and 100, you've created, you know, a regulatory asset on their side. I mean, at some point, if you're taking money away from them on the front end, you are going to need to spread that out over the perceived lifetime of that rate. And in some case, that means a heavier burden on the back end because you've got to make up for lost time on the front end. So that does come with a double-edged sword in the jurisdictions that have done that. That's not to say that it couldn't happen here. We have so many facts that are not yet in evidence we don't know. It may be that, and this is a hypothetical, but maybe the residential and industrial interveners and the staff and Black Hills Power will agree to some sort of a more atypical approach than what we've used in South Dakota. And if that's the case, the commission will have to decide whether or not the pros outweigh the cons of that kind of approach. We don't know if that's going to happen. But let's check with the Commissioners Kolbeck and Hansen, Mr. Rizlov, Mr. Smith, see if I've missed anything.
Yeah, I would agree with Commissioner Johnson on that. It's not typical, not to say it's impossible, though. A lot of it is, in my mind, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but basically if you buy a new car, your payments are high for the first 4 years or 5 years or 6 years, whatever you want that to be. But after that's paid off, then you're making more money on that because it's getting you to work. It's your return on your investment. The thing that you have to determine on, and I'm being very vague here, but how much interest do you want to pay in your car? Do you want to pay it off in 4 years, 5 years, 6 years? You're actually going to, it's going to cost you more. And that's kind of what a stepped rate will do. In the end, it's possible that like Commissioner Johnson said, the burden's heavier on the back end. You'll actually end up paying more for the investment on the front end.
Mr. Rizlov, other comments?
The timing is such now they've scheduled the power plant to go into service in March, I believe. And ultimately, and let's pick a number. Let's say they got the entire 26%. If that happened to be phased in over 3 or 4 years, I think the point is, and it's been made by the commissioners already, if it phased in over 3 years, it would still reach 26% plus any shortfall until that point would be added on at the end. So perhaps at that point you would be paying a 30% rate increase because you would have to make up for the amount that was foregone the first couple years, the first 3 years, plus a return on that money during the period of time that they had foregone that increase. So it's a bit like paying with credit card. You know, do I pay cash now or do I put it on time and then pay on time? Now, I'm not saying their interest is equal to credit card interest. It's not. But when you're talking about substantial increase, that's what you end up doing. Now, There are other alternatives to step increases, but the time has passed for that. And frankly, let me put it this way. What the company has done in filing this rate increase follows what commission's precedent has been since 1975, that I can assure you. And I could also add this. There's a reason for it. It's been what's accepted most by the public over time. It follows two principles, used and useful. Basically, that means I pay only for what the utility is now using to provide service, and it also fits the criteria of paying for today's bills for today's service. In other words, I don't put it off. People die, people move in, and you get into generational inequities when you do something other than cost. But it gets very complicated very fast, and maybe it'd be better to discuss this offline with anybody who would care to hear more.
Well, and I would just want to make it clear, although we're raising some pros and some cons, I at least haven't made any determination on whether or not that's the right thing to do. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. It's not typical in not just this state, but across the country it's not typical. It doesn't mean it's not a possibility. Commissioner Hansen, did you have anything to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wilcox, I should never forget your name. I know Jim Wilcox very well. He's a good guy. Don't worry about it. Yes, you are. There are a lot of different theories on rates and rate design. And you bring up an interesting one on implementation of rates. I have a lot of experience with different rates and rate designs, having been utilities commissioner at a municipality. And one of the things that's interesting is potential for step increase, and that's what I thought you were originally getting to when you were talking about a rate increase over an extended period of time. One of the things in order to encourage energy efficiency is to have some call it a step, some call it a block increase, so that as usage increases, then after a certain amount, then there's a step, and the cost of electricity increases then for that volume of electricity that's used above that. There's
kind of like a threshold.
Exactly. And as it increases, of course, that is a disincentive to use electricity. That's why it's energy efficiency issue, but that's used in water and other issues. There's a lot of different types of theories on rating, and a lot of it, as Mr. Rizlo was explaining, is based upon past experiences and having gone through the court systems and being tried and tested and knowing that this is something that will pass legal muster. We as commissioners are certainly interested in reliability. And we're also very interested in affordability and sustainability and renewable energy and environmental impacts and our energy not being susceptible to foreign manipulation. All of these different things are items that we are personally concerned about and work through on that entire design process.
And we'll go ahead and let you ask your question of Black Hills Power. You probably noticed the answers are longer when you ask questions at the table with five people than if you ask at the table of one. So our apologies.
Not like many cooks in the kitchen. Yeah, right. First of all, thanks for putting up with us tonight. How many of these procedures have you gone through?
This is the first one for this rate case.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I meant for you personally going through this kind of thing.
Well, we haven't filed rate cases very often, so very few.
Nope,
this is fine.
I guess two questions are, maybe you've already done this and I missed it, so I apologize if I'm making you rehash something. Could you kind of break down in layman's terms what makes up that 26.6% rate increase? So, you know, 5% of that is X.
Okay. We have been making significant investments to meet our obligation to serve. We look to do it in the lowest cost possible, but we need to provide safe and reliable service. About 60 to 65% of the increase is related to the YGen 3 power plant. The 10 to 15% is related to generation, transmission, and distribution infrastructure. We've been in an active construction period. Increasing our 230 kV transmission, increasing some of our substation capabilities. We also have had a mobile communication system upgrade, and we actually expanded those, what you see in the picture, are air-cooled condensing technology. We expanded the cooling capabilities of Neil Simpson Unit Number 3, and we actually were able to get, I believe, about 5 to 8 megawatts of additional generation for about half the cost of what we've included for YGen 3. So it's a very cost-effective expansion of that 15-year-old generation. We also have seen other increases in our operating costs, and that makes up the difference. And those are changes in our operating costs since the last test year, which was 2005, those historical costs. The first two were added together, and the last one made up the difference.
So that leads to my third question. If that 11.5% shareholder return were reduced, how much would that affect the 26.6% rate increase? Let's say they said no. they probably wouldn't bill us just for argument's sake.
Yeah. Well, last year Black Hills Power made about $23 million in net income. So if we made no profit for our shareholders, which means they'd be pretty reluctant to invest in our business because we're not getting recovery of our costs of service, we would wipe out about two-thirds of the $32 million increase that we've requested. So if we don't get a recovery of our costs, we're not going to be profitable for our shareholders. And in order for this business to be around for 125 years, we've had to be profitable. And we'll need to be profitable in the future.
Is that 20 million?
23 million last in 2008.
So the 11.5% is 20 million of your 32 million?
If we have about $400 million of investment, and about $200 million of that is assumed to have been provided by our shareholders. There's what they call a hypothetical capital structure typically in these things. But $200 million is cash provided by our shareholders. If we earn a 10% return on that, that's $20 million.
Okay.
And so we're in that range of net income. We've asked for 11.5% return on equity, so that's how you get into those $20 to $25 million net income ranges.
My question is, I guess, to address the other gentleman who is really concerned about the 11% increase. The question is really how much does that impact the rate increase? So, to the extent that shareholder investment is adjustable.
Well, a key area of contention in a rate case is whether shareholders need a 10% return or an 11.5% return on their invested equity to continue to encourage them to want to own shares of Black Hills Power and want to continue to add to their investment in Black Hills Power. Because it's profit to a shareholder, we pay federal income taxes at a rate of 35%. Which means we have to pay for the federal income taxes, and then what's left after that is what's for shareholders. So it does have a fairly material impact if you move the return on equity down. And often, if you see a difference between what our utility requested and what the rates are, it's not all of the costs of the utility. It's a difference of opinion on what's fair for shareholders.
Yeah, and I respect that because you deserve to make money. So I know you're representing your shareholders and you have to speak carefully tonight because that's your paycheck. But maybe I should just be a little bit more blunt. If you got 0% on this 11.5%, how much would that reduce the 26.6% rate increase?
If we made no profit in the utility, because we pay federal income, we wouldn't have any federal income taxes. So it would reduce it probably by two-thirds.
May I, Mr. Chairman, with your permission? It seemed to me that you were on two different train tracks as you were asking your question. And Kyle, I believe what he was asking, and you will correct me if I'm wrong, was not how much money was paid to stockholders a week ago or a year ago or whatever, ignoring all that, just looking at this 26.6%, the percentage of how much of that 26.6% rate increase will go towards the 11% return to stockholders?
Well, we've had an increase in rate base, and I don't know exactly, but it's probably $50 million. And so you're talking about probably $5 to $7 million of the 32 is associated with additional return for shareholders.
Okay,
And I think Commissioner Hansen dealt with the one track, and I'll try to deal with the other track, because you asked it once, and Mr. White, I don't think we got the question answered, but at one point, Mr. Wilcox had said, you know, if you're asking for an 11.5% return and the commission instead gives you a 10% return, how much does that bring? I mean, if rates were going to get increased by 26.6%, what would the rates get increased with that? That was the only change the commission made to your application. Is that?
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Yeah. And that's math in public, and I know that's tough to do.
Sure.
But we're not going to hold you to number, but if you got a ballpark, it'd be helpful. I mean, let's see.
It's less than $5 million.
But the question is, if you're asking for 26.6% increase in rates, if the return went from 11.5 to 10, what does that 26.6 go to?
Somewhere between probably 20 and 22%.
Okay. And I think that was at least at the beginning the point you were trying to make, that although return is important, it is not nearly as important as determining some of those expenses and what's prudent. The return on those expenses is important, but it's not as big as what the base you're drawing off is.
Right. I guess what I was concerned about is that we not focus so much on some guys making some money off of a commodity that we all use and that we all benefit from greatly. Sort of, you know, focusing on the small blemish in the bigger picture. I don't mean to make it seem like a blemish. I think your concerns as a committee, as a commission, are on just what you said, on those bigger issues, the things that more materially affect that rate increase. So from my layman's perspective, it seems like this 11.5% doesn't generally affect that rate increase terribly much. Obviously, if it's zero, that would. But like I said, I don't think that's a free market society. So I think that helps me understand. So thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Wilcox. We allowed a little more give and back and forth there than we normally do, but I think we got to the heart of the issue, so that was probably helpful. Thanks for your patience. Yeah, and just Mr. Smith just reminded me that the return we're talking about is what's been requested. That's not. I mean, that's what they've requested for a return on top of that base. That's not, that 11% is an 11% increase of anything necessarily from what they've currently got in rates. Did I say that right, Mr. Smith? Is that the point you wanted to get across? I should have just had told you to grab the mic, but okay. Other questions or comments? Good evening.
Jerry Schmidt, Vice President of Operations for Black Hills Federal Credit Union. Most of my questions have already been addressed, and I did speak with Mr. White on break on the amortization of this $400 million. I guess I'd like to know a little more, a couple from the PUC procedure-wise. Does the PUC have input onto that shareholder return, and it is a smaller portion of that? But what's the breakdown for the depreciation of these assets? I know you got probably a 45-year depreciation on the power station, but the transmission lines and so on. I mean, the math I see doesn't really add up for me. It's about a $32 million return on a $400 million investment, even with shareholder value. You're somewhere there in the 15 years on a 45-year asset.
Great question, Mr. Schmidt. I'll try to answer it, and you tell me where I'm wrong. There are really, when you talk about rate of return, there are two components to that. Mr. White talked about a hypothetical debt to equity spread, and that or split. Basically, what that's saying is we're going to assume this company's getting half of their money by people loaning them money, and then half of their money from, you know, people investing in their company. And you need to give people more money as an investor because there's a greater risk portfolio. If I buy into your company, that's riskier than if I just loan you money, at least generally. And so in their application, and I'll speak in big generalities, but I think they have, or I won't even talk about this application. It has not been unusual in recent years for us to see companies propose a 6 or 7% return on debt and an 11% or so return on equity. I would tell you that is generally a source of contention between commission staff and the company. Commission staff hires their, that is a very technical area, maybe the most technical area. And so commission staff has usually hired a rate of return expert, somebody who's able to say that if this market was, if what return would, should the market be providing for a company with this risk portfolio? I don't know for sure, but I don't think it'll be any surprise if their rate of return analyst and their rate of return analyst have different estimates of what a proper return should be. And we try to focus also on the, not just on that, but the blended rate. You know, if you take 6.5 and 11, you know, if you get a rate of return at, you know, 9% or something, maybe that's reasonable, maybe that's not in this case. But we'll hear from experts, and I don't want to talk about this proceeding, but I would tell you that it has been not unusual for this commission to grant a rate of return different than what has been asked for by the company in previous rate cases. Maybe not. Maybe not 2 or 3 points difference, but the experts differ.
Okay. And then, you know, I guess the way I see it too is trickle down. And looking at this for our organization, it's going to be about $60,000 a year increase to operations. And for everybody, you know, say I pay $300 in my house, and every business I go to, it gets passed down to me. So, as a businessman, it affects me. It affects all of our members, 50,000 members in the Black Hills. But it affects all of us from every business we do business with. So I understand they have a big investment in that, but I just want to make sure the process gets looked at and that it's fair and equitable. Thank you.
Was a question on depreciation there. That is a really complex area, but needless to say, there are generally book values for large assets, and those are depreciated out over their useful life, and there are some time-honored rules of thumb that are generally used during a proceeding. Very oversimplified, but... While other people are gathering their thoughts, we will make it clear that this is not your last opportunity to be heard. Almost any avenue you can imagine for providing comment to the commission, whether it postal service, email, using a web form, phone call, we're certainly happy to take your comments and concerns and questions. And, in fact, we solicit them. We ask for them. And you can make those informal comments, which don't have the weight of evidence necessarily, but certainly enter into commissioners' minds as we move through the process. I would think those might be helpful all the way up until the point in March where the commission is expected to render a decision. The earlier the better, but this is not your last opportunity by a far cry to have your comments be heard. Other comments or questions? Other comments or questions? Other comments or questions? I won't wax too nostalgic, but I'll just say that this, this has been impressive. I mean, I sort of feel like in a perfect world, this is how society would work. People show up, they speak their mind, they make some really good points, and the people who work for them take lots of notes, and we have an opportunity to ask questions of the folks who are asking for an increase. So this has been fantastic, and that has a lot more to do with you all. So thank you for your patience in coming here tonight. And with that, if there's nothing further, we'll stand adjourned.